Hi there, this is Alan Tudyk. I'm Wash. And at times I will wash myself just when I get dirty. This is Hypeable Podcast. Talk about Firefly, why don't you?
Welcome, everybody, back to Rewatchable, a podcast brought to you from the folks at Hypeable.com, where we rewatch some of your very favorite TV shows that went off the air way too soon. And we are finally at the very end of rewatching the Firefly series. We've already watched the entire TV show, and now this podcast. Yeah, I know. Shed a tear. Tear or shed. And now we are up to rewatching the Serenity movie, which came out after the show was off the air. And today, everyone is on the podcast. So this should be fun. Can't wait. Just to let you know how to get in touch with us, because we definitely are going to be doing some shows after our Firefly Serenity routine. You can get in touch with us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can send us a tweet at re_watchable, or you can post over on hypeable.com. That's hypeable.com. And if you really love us, if you really, really love us, we wouldn't mind if you gave us a review over on iTunes to let everybody else know about the podcast. So thank you very much.
We might do a special reprise of our theme tune song interpretation.
Oh, no. Yes. Our dramatic interpretation of the song. Yeah. It's something that you need to do when you're a little buzzed or sleep deprived. And I think each of us is somewhere
luckily,
in between that.
Yay!
In case anybody's wondering, we're recording this at like 8 o'clock in the morning on the 4th of July, so it's going to be interesting, folks.
In the spirit of freedom.
Brown coats unite. There we are. Mm-hmm. Perfectly. All right, so why don't I just summarize our movie here, which the movie begins with a look at how exactly Simon and River came to escape from the Alliance. What did they do? And then what was the fallout locally there at the Alliance for the fact that the TAMs escaped? And we start to learn a little bit more about River, basically that she has what I guess you could call psychic abilities, and there were an awful lot of high-profile government people in a room with somebody who is intensely psychically intuitive, and these are people who obviously have highly classified secrets running around their brain, and you expose them to somebody like River, which was not exactly the smartest thing anyone in government ever did. They are now basically after them because they don't know exactly what River absorbed and who she could potentially tell what to. Then we flash forward over to the crew of Serenity, and we've discovered that since we last left the crew, there have been a couple of changes on board. Book is no longer with them traveling. He is on a planet where he's established basically, I guess you could call it an outpost of, you know, just people living a daily peaceful life, peaceful existence. The same thing is true of Inara. Inara is no longer traveling with them aboard Serenity. She has set up a practice as a companion at a very specific location as well. So the two of them are no longer there. And as far as the rest of the life on the ship, all of our regulars are still there. They're still on board. But there's definitely a tension because it's clear that Simon and River are no longer, I guess you could say, entirely safe. It's really come to light that River is a weapon. We saw little glimmers of it in the TV show where River, you know, just shot wildly and killed three guys with no effort whatsoever. And here we have a scene in the bar where River is triggered to go into attack mode and literally takes out an entire bar of rough, burly guys. I think my favorite quote from that scene is Mal being asked, "Do you know that girl?" And Mal goes, "I surely do not." As she just, you know, takes out the bar, and then Simon uses her safe word, shuts her down. So there you have it. They end up just to find out what's going on. They go to a new character we've never met before named Mr. Universe, played by David Krumholz of Numbers fame. If he looked familiar with anybody, that's who he was. And Mr. Universe kind of helps them fill in some of the blanks. And what ends up happening is they realize that the biggest blank is this mystery planet of Miranda that seems to be running through River's head. And they end up going to Miranda trying to find out what is going on, all the while being chased by the operative, who is in the Alliance's, he's the Alliance's servant. And he's there trying to shut them down before they can get to their ultimate goal. And then it all comes to a head with a major battle and resolution, which we'll get into with the podcast. So it's a very long-winded summary, but it is
a long movie.
But I would say, but in fairness, it is a 2-hour movie. So, you know, what are you going to do? I'm our ultimate, you know, super fan here. And needless to say, I really loved the movie, although there were parts I was like, no!
Wonder what those were.
You know, which I'll certainly get into. I only had a couple little quibbles with the movie, really. But I definitely want to hear what all of you guys thought. So let's talk about our newbies here. Kristen, why don't we start off with you? What was your newbie reaction to this?
Despite it being very late last night and feeling very nervous about how much sleep I was going to get, I loved the movie. Oh my gosh. I really, really loved Serenity and everything about it. I feel like there were a few little twerks here and there, tweaks, wow, I can't talk, to different characters. And I wasn't upset by them. I was actually like enthused by the little things that changed. And I just loved the movie. I loved it from start to finish.
What kind of stuff changed about the characters?
Well, like, Simon seemed to have a lot more of a backbone. Like, in the show, he kind of progressed to that a little bit, but I don't think he had gotten as far right. as where he is in the movie, where he just, like, walks up to Mal and just starts spurting stuff off, and I was like,
yeah,
whoa.
A little bit of the time had passed, and we sort of missed that time. I can see what you mean there.
Yeah, like, and just, I mean, really minor stuff like that, but, you know, and, like, Kaylee almost seemed more adorable. Like, if that's possible, like, she just, especially at the beginning of the movie, just really, really sweet and, you know, even sweeter than I feel like we saw in the show. So nothing hugely dramatic, but just little things that I noticed.
Kyle, how about you? What was your reaction to it?
Oh, I loved it. This had everything that I could ever have hoped for. It had Simon. It had Simon being a kick-ass, like, awesome person. It had Shepherd Book and his death. It had more death. It had bodies. It had action, and it had resolution. So it was great. It was perfect.
I love it. I love it how it's the death toll, and I love how to the very end Kyle is going, yes, Book died.
Oh yeah.
I know, I feel so terrible about that because I made that joke in the group. I was like, maybe Shepherd Book is, because I didn't know he died. I thought that there was only one death. I hadn't watched it all the way through, so I was like, I suddenly feel really bad about our book hate because he didn't.
I'm still convinced that he was evil and he died before he was able to finish out his evil plan.
Yeah, let's say that.
Lordy. Well, Selena, what about you? Because you said you had watched it only halfway previously, and now this is your first time watching it, and so you're sort of the quasi newbie. So, what was that like watching and then watching the part that you hadn't ever gotten to?
I mean, you know, it's funny, and I want to be sort of really frank here because I think, you know, my being such the ultimate Whedon fangirl that I am, that my relationship with Firefly has always been really strange because I never loved it as much as I feel like I should. You know what I mean? Like, it seems like, and I'm watching and thinking, this is something that I should love. What's wrong with me? And the first time around when I was watching Firefly all the way through, I wasn't in the right mindset. We've talked about that before. And when I got to Serenity, I had this thing where the beginning of the movie, I want to say the flashback, all of that, and transitioning into River's backstory, I loved it. I thought it was amazing. But then the first time around, I remember watching it through and I got to around the middle bit. Could have been around the first time they visited Book, something like that. And I had this point of being like, okay, so it's just more of the same. And I had, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know what happened. And it kind of happened the same this time, around the same point in the story. But obviously I had to keep going. And then the last half was like amazing. And I was, for the last 20 minutes, I was staring at the screen. My eyes were just getting bigger and bigger. And because I didn't know what happened, like, the only death I knew about was Wash's. And that was because, and we should talk about that, because, you know, I interviewed the actor and he spoiled me on Wash's death.
Oh, no!
I know. Because I hadn't watched, like, to that point yet, but I was, like, pretending that I had. And I was like, oh, yeah, so there's lots of talks of a sequel. And he was like, yeah, but I won't be in the sequel. And I was like, yeah, of course you won't. Like, inside, I was dying. But anyway, so, like, I thought, oh, my God, is Simon going to die too? Like, is River, what is happening? And, yeah, I was like, why did I not finish this movie the first time around? The last 20 minutes totally were the best 20 minutes ever. So, yeah. And then I watched all of the extra material on the DVD, and now I am, like, a brown coat, like, all the way.
There you go.
Like, that's they perfect. Can't kill us. And I was like, I know.
Can't I am so going out and buying the Steelbook cover of this, by the way, because it's awesome. Like, it has, like, this faded front on it, and I saw it the other day at Best Buy, and I was like, oh my God, wow. I think I want that. And after watching it, I'm like, yeah, I definitely need that.
And now I'm, like, annoyed because Kyle has the big Serenity Firefly book that I got at some point.
I was just going to say.
Like, I want it back.
Oh, do you want it back?
No, I'm good.
Oh, okay.
It weighs like 20 kilos.
I can still give that away to one of our listeners, absolutely, mm-hmm. Or readers.
Well, actually, this is probably a good way just even to segue into this, but there are a number of tie-in products that, now that we're done watching the movie, there's all sorts of interesting graphic novels and all things.
The comics, yeah.
Yeah, that cover the gap in between where we left with Firefly and where Serenity picks up. So there's a whole graphic novel series in there. There's also things that explain backstories. I know Kyle is not the Shepherd book fan, but there is a whole series called The Shepherd's Tale, where it explains who Shepherd Book is and how he came to be who he was. So there's really just so much extra material out there that if you are not done personally with Firefly, you do not need to be done. You can get out there and there's just, I mean, go to Amazon.com and just, you know, throw in Joss Whedon Firefly into the search parameter and you will get a ton of extra information. And at this point, I think it's pretty much all published. The real excruciating part is when you had to wait for parts of it. But lots of good stuff. Lots of good stuff there. How about Caitlin and Karen? Because this was not your first time through. What was it like doing a rewatch on this?
The buildup really bothered me in this one. I remember the first time I watched it, being the Simon fangirl that I am, and I was so bothered by the tension between Mal and Simon. And it wasn't just that Simon had gotten a backbone, but it was that Mal was being such an ass the whole time. And I'm going, when did this tension happen? Like, I know time is supposed to have passed, but this doesn't feel organic to me. And
exactly.
Mal's just being an ass.
Yes,
about
I completely
all of this.
Agree.
But the whole arc, or one of the big arcs through Firefly, had been Simon earning his place on the crew. And then Mal had a line about how I only look out for my own, and that only includes you if I conjure it does. I was like, excuse you? Wasn't there an episode where Simon was like, you don't even like me? Why did you come back for us? And then he's like, you're on my crew. Why are we still talking about this? I was going, what is going on here? So that really took me out of the movie from the start.
I think that was one of the changes that, like, Kristen was talking about in the beginning. Like, right when the movie started, he was acting like that. And I was just like, wait a minute. This is not Mal. What is going on?
See,
like,
this is funny because this doesn't bother me at all, but maybe it's because I don't really like Simon that much.
Oh.
It's like, how dare he come in and, like, try to control the ship? I was with Mal.
Yeah. I think it didn't bother me because I was assuming the time gap, because it's clear that there is a time gap. So for me, I just chalked it up to something happened in the time gap to establish that, but I do see where you're coming from.
Have you read the comics? Like, was there anything revealed?
I have not read all of them. I've read some of them. I mean, it's basically more of them doing your typical runs, and that it becomes more and more difficult for them to make money because the Alliance is constantly on their ass. So they are really struggling at this point to find work and find jobs, and that is, to a degree, why Inara and Book end up leaving, because it just kind of affects who they are as people. If Inara can't get companion work, that doesn't help her in any sense. And then Book had kind of, like, spent his time with them, and he felt like, you know, he was in a good place, but he wanted to go back two people and mission two people, and that's why he left.
Yeah, I guess they could have done a bit more to explore that.
Yeah. Karen, how about you? What was it like for you on the rewatch?
Well, I mean, I love the movie. I did from the first time that I watched it. This is the second time that I watched it, and like you were saying, Caitlin, the buildup, especially for me, the buildup to Wash's death was agony because I knew it was coming, and it hurt so much worse the second time around, and I was just like, whose bright idea was to watch this again? It was tough, but I mean, I still really love the movie, and I think it was a good send-off for the show.
Yeah.
Cool. So why don't we talk a little bit about the show itself? I think one of the things that we all liked was getting that big payoff in the beginning of getting to see exactly how Simon broke River out and a little more detail on exactly who she was and what she knew. I know I really enjoyed that. So we had a sense of like jeopardy right from the beginning. So we knew exactly what was going on.
Did anyone else get hot and heavy from Simon being a kickass? Like mm-hmm. just saving his sister? Like, oh my goodness. I was just like, nah. Damn, boy.
I love too, because now we're talking movie on how they could kick it up a little bit. I mean, not for nothing. Needle in Brain. Ouch.
Oh, I know.
Yeah. Yeah. I just remember looking at her and him going, River, and then looking, just pulling this thing. And I went, oh God, oh God, oh God, oh God, oh God, oh God, oh God. Because I was terrified of what I was going to see after that needle came out of her head. I was like, ah.
Yeah. Freaky, freaky. Yeah. Really freaky. So we get that, and then we get the guy who's playing the operative, who is Chiwetel, and I will mispronounce his last name, so I'm just not going to do it, who some of us are hoping becomes the next Doctor Who, by the way. So he does a great job of playing the operative, I thought. I thought he was really good at being cold and calculating, but still interesting. How did you guys like the characterization of the operative?
You know, interestingly enough, I made a Doctor Who connection with him when I first saw him for some reason. Like, the first millisecond, I thought, Mickey. Like, I don't know why I saw Mickey in him at all. And I was just like, huh, I don't like you. I don't like Mickey, so I don't like you. I don't even know who you are, but I don't like Mickey. Therefore, I don't know. And then, therefore, I mean, he was an assassin.
He's much older than Mickey, isn't he?
Oh, yeah, no, he is. I don't know why my brain associated with him with Mickey from the get-go, but it did. And I was just like, no, I'm pretty sure I'm not going to like you. And then I didn't like him. It was interesting.
That he was better than that random guy they had in the show.
Episodes. Oh, yeah. I liked him a lot more than that random, dirty, rapist person.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Jubal Early. Yeah, I mean, he's much more finessed. I mean, Jubal Early is a bounty hunter. You know, his basic thing is grab quarry. I don't care how badly I injure them. I just want my reward. Versus the operative is interesting because he's actually acting on behalf of the government, but thinking he's on like a morally righteous task, you know, and the operative really does think that he is operating, quote unquote, for the better good or the good of all. And, you know, he soon comes to realize that that is definitely not what has been happening. But I mean, cool. I mean, I loved his characterization. Anybody else have thoughts on him?
I didn't like him, honestly. The first time I watched it, I made the connection immediately to Jubal Early, probably because I watched the movie directly after finishing the show. And I thought Jubal Early was far more interesting. Like, I just thought he had more personality, and the operative felt very bland to me. Like, maybe it was just because he was pretty even-keeled about everything he did, but I just wasn't interested in him at all.
Yeah, he didn't even have a name. I mean, like, even a name kind of would have made it more interesting to see, like, how, like, weird or interesting his name is, and he's just, like, the operative.
In my head and in my notes, I just kept referring to him as the creepy dude, because I just wasn't happy with him and just, like, pissed at him that he was even around, because I was like, you're going to make everything so much worse for all of these people. I don't like you.
His entire personality was his mission, and that's boring to me. Like, at least Jubal Early, like, he had an awful personality outside of his mission, but he had a personality outside of his mission, and I didn't think the operative really did.
See, it's funny, because I actually feel exactly the opposite of that. I felt like Early was over the top, and I love villains that aren't over the top. The operative was really subdued, and I like villains that think they're 100% right. I think it's a lot more interesting that way. So even though he was obviously the bad guy in this episode or this movie, and even though by the end of it, he kind of changes his tune, but at the same time, he doesn't necessarily turn into a good guy or anything like that. I actually really enjoyed his character, and I thought that he made a much scarier villain than Early did.
Yeah, I agree with that, kind of, but I also think, like, just the very end of it, that was actually one of the things I have listed as my minor gripes with the movie, is that I thought that was a little too neat, like, how he just kind of changed his tune last minute, and then he was like, oh, by the way, we're not going to kill you.
Yeah, it is an interesting...
But otherwise, I thought he was fine.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about more of where the movie goes. I mean, the movie, the action basically kicks off with the crew pulling a job, which, if you think about it, is very unlike the other jobs that they have previously pulled. In the past, it's always been like smuggle this cargo or, you know, rob from the rich and give to the poor. Like when they broke into the medical facility on Planet, they were meeting an immediate need of, you know, assessing River's brain, getting drugs, and then they were going to distribute the needed medicines to all the outer planets. Here, their purpose is basically rob a bank for themselves, which is really very different than any other kind of job they've had. So you can really see kind of how they are desperate to...
Let's be bad guys.
Yeah, and to make... Like, they are literally down to robbing banks to survive. So it is a very different, you know, situation than what we had in the series. Now, obviously, they're robbing an Alliance bank. It's an Alliance payroll that they're robbing. So we feel, like, less conflicted about it. But still, it definitely lets you know where they're at this point. What I thought was really cool is how they were able to juxtapose that and to bring the Reavers back.
Oh my God,
at the same time. Because the Reavers in the first series, like, they're there, but we only have, like, I think 2 episodes, maybe 3, where Reavers are mentioned. So it's like they're there, but they're the boogeyman, but you don't get the idea that they're going to be so interconnected into the heart of what goes on. And now it's like, boom, they're here. And because we're in a movie, we can kick it up another level. What did you guys think of the whole Reaver scene?
I was just going to say, this was actually, I think, my favorite part of the movie. The Reaver aspect of it is probably the thing that I loved the very most, because as you say, like, I wasn't expecting that particular mystery to be resolved at all. And then the way that that just turned, not only did the Reavers return and were like a major threat, but the entire point of the story became the Reavers and how they were created and letting the truth about that out. I was like, wow. And I never saw it coming, you know, to the very end when they were like, that woman projection was going like, oh yeah. And everybody just keeled over and died. And then she was like, and 10% of us had the opposite reaction. And I was like, oh, it's one of those amazing moments, you know, I loved it.
Yeah, I mean, I love too in that jail cell, you know, when we first see them. So they really finesse, I think, really well how they reintroduce them. Mm-hmm. That, you know, they then break out and Mal's like, get in that jail cell, lock yourself in, do not open that door for nothing. And then you get to see, you know, them being chased by the Reavers as they're calling, you know, Wash in to come and help them. But as the machine is like firing at them and, you know, they get wounded and things, like, those are things that they could never have done on the TV series just because of the level of violence. And I love that they were able to do that in the movie. Not that I'm into like gratuitous violence, but I think you had to up the level of how merciless and vicious the Reavers could be. And I think they did a really good job in that first scene of saying, yeah, that is how serious this is. You know, they are not to be played with.
I also really loved Jane's like out and out panic the minute River says Reavers. Like, everybody else gets really worried. You can see the looks on their faces change, but Jane just like flips, like a switch just kind of goes click, and he just, you know, is looking around, and the minute they step out, he's like, do you see anything? Like, for some reason, his reaction just brought it home for me just how terrible these things, you know, these things are. Because it's been so long since we've seen them. And, you know, we haven't really had a Reaver interaction since the beginning of the series. So I loved the Reaver stuff in the movie. I loved getting the backstory and finding out where they came from and all of that too. So it was, yeah, Jane, I really loved the reverse.
Jane was great in this movie, wasn't he?
He was great. I just have one pet peeve about the whole thing, is the fact that he got an arrow stuck through his entire freaking leg, and he was walking the entire movie. I was like,
yeah, he was not. Yeah,
I mean, like, I know it's a very, very nitpicky thing, but still, I was just like, oh,
maybe they used some of that magic paste.
I know the paste that magically
saved
up
everybody.
Yeah. The magic caulking
gun.
Simon
got freaking shot, and he was fine.
Yeah, I know.
It looks like, stab with a sword. I mean, these guys are tough, okay?
Right, yeah, right? Seriously. Yeah. So after the Reavers, they basically, you know, end up in this bar room. And we already talked that there's a bit of a discussion as to, you know, is River going to still, you know, the tensions are running high. They get into the bar and River, I love in our document, it says River goes a little postal. yeah, you think? I loved that sequence so much because it really showed off Summer Glau's dance moves, and they deliberately choreographed that and the later scene with her to be a much more dance-like battle, because she is she's a trained ballerina. And I thought it was amazing because that was like nobody's ballet fight sequence that I've ever seen. I thought that was one of like the most awesome fight sequences ever. Also, especially cinematically, because there aren't a lot of cuts on that camera. It's just continuous action. So to remember a sequence like that, and then to have all the extras come in and come out at just the right time, I mean, wow, what a tough thing to film. Oh, yeah. How did you guys feel about that entire River Going Postal sequence?
It was honestly one of like the most beautiful, like eye-pleasing, like amazing battle scenes that I've ever watched. Like for a movie, I think it's just the way how smooth it went is just amazing. And like what you said, the fact that everyone was able to be on cue and on time made it 100% perfect. There was like not a single flaw.
And one of my pet peeves for giant fight scenes is always that one guy attacks at a time, and you know, you get one guy comes up and everybody else just kind of hangs back and lets him die. Like, I loved that in this, it didn't really happen. Like, they all were on top of her, like, and they just managed to choreograph it that she knew where they were and took care of each one as they became an immediate threat to her. And I loved it. It was really, really well done.
One of the keys to it, I thought, too, was establishing that nobody could get to a gun, because the parameters of that establishment were that you all had to check your weapons at the door in a hand-coded lockdown.
That was, okay. Like,
because the obvious is, oh my god, just shoot her, and that can't happen.
How do people get away with that, though? How do people just like, oh, let me just store this in case something goes bad? Like,
it's not entirely unheard of if you consider that we're talking about the space western here. There were definite towns in the Midwest at points that had gun-free zones, and in order for you to get into that town, you literally checked your weapon at the town border, and there were deputies and things there who obviously they were armed to the teeth, but they made sure you checked your weapons in. So it's not an entirely unheard of concept, but I mean, certainly was convenient in this case.
Can we rewind a little bit just to talk about the fact that, you know, Simon and River decide to leave the ship in the first place before they even get into that bar?
Yeah.
Because what? It just like, it goes back to the tension that was mounting between Simon and Mal. And just that's part of the thing that really bothered me, was just like immediately like, well, we'll just leave the ship. I was like, what are you doing?
It was a little bit unnecessary considering how quickly they got back on the ship.
Yeah. And I loved River's reaction to all of that. Like, that she's saying, yeah, we should leave for them. Like, the minute Simon walks away. Like, I like that she seems to understand just what's coming, and it makes it a lot eerier. You know that something bad is coming their way, and River's known the whole time, so we get to know that too. And I loved that whole thing of it, but yeah, it did seem a little bit superfluous that they're like, we're leaving, and then they never
leave. We're back!
Ta-da! Yeah.
So I've always felt like in this movie, and that's another little nitpick that I've had, that Simon seems to have far more awareness of what's going on with River than he ever did in the show. Like, in the flashback, he is impersonating someone high up in government and like actually sees River. And I'm just thinking, he seems to know far more in this movie than he ever did in the show. And then, so it almost seems like, you know, he gets the idea, maybe even the same idea that River has, but I don't feel like he ever would have had that in the show. And that's something else that gave me a disconnect and bothered me.
Hmm. Yeah. I have to say, when I originally like pictured the Tam's escape and all of that, I definitely didn't think of him impersonating like a higher up in the alliance. And, you know, I approached it more as like he snuck in the middle of the night and snuck her out of there. In my head, that's the canon I had kind of created. And so him, the whole opening sequence was amazing, but I do get where you're coming from, that it just seems like he had a greater understanding of what happened to her and what was going on. And throughout the entire series, she's a giant mystery to him. And in here, you lose a bit of that mystery because he seems to know how to control her and how to stop her and that sort of thing.
He seems so startled by the psychic idea that comes up at the very end of the series. And then he's just, within the flashback almost, it seems like he's aware of this. And that really bothered me.
And you also kind of like, you miss the fact about who's helping him escape, who's raising that platform that they were using to escape out of the elevator hatch or whatever that was. Like, why, who are them and why can't they stay with them? Why, what made them go and catch cover under the Serenity, you know? Like, that was like, when I saw that happening, I was like, that's not Mal. Who's helping him and why didn't they stay with them, you know? But maybe that's just my thought process behind that.
So yep. Next on Simon Cass.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, actually, the next thing maybe to talk about is the fact that, I mean, so River does go postal and Simon finally shuts her down before, I mean, she slaughters the whole bar, which I know I definitely thought about it on two levels. One, obviously this was info Simon was holding out on. And in the past, he's always like, no, she's not dangerous. She's, you know, an 18-year-old girl, blah, blah, blah. Well, you were given a safe word, dude. What did you think she might do? But at the same time, I know I wondered, I mean, clearly the Alliance, you know, puts out the Fruity Bar song, which, like, that's the one detriment to the movie. Oh, my gosh. Is, like, if you watch the movie, that song freaking goes through your head the rest of the day. But what took them so long? I mean, that was one thing for me. If all it took to find her was just doing that, you would assume, I was kind of surprised that they did not do that quicker, just because that's obviously what they were looking for, was set it off and let's find a massive disturbance somewhere with all of our security cameras, and there she is. So I was a little surprised that it took them so long to think about doing that. Was anyone else shocked with it?
Well, I kind of thought it made a lot of sense as to like why they didn't find her until now, because they've been avoiding Alliance planets and stuff like that, and so she hasn't really had an opportunity to be in a sort of big community. I know like there have been shots of her in like that place where they get shipments and stuff, but like I feel like they haven't really, or at least River hasn't been centered in an Alliance planet long enough to see any transmissions or television things like that, and so when they saw that, I guess that's when she cracked. But what I'm more interested in is they didn't really fully explain, like they explained that set her off, and they explained that there's a message behind that, but they didn't really explain why she was set off by like the cans in the kitchen or like the logo on Jane's shirt. Like, there was no hidden message behind a logo on a shirt. And so,
wasn't that just the color?
I think
it's the color?
I thought it was everything. It was the song. I thought it had to be the complete package. The song, the imagery, the hidden signal. I thought it was, I mean, it had to be the entire combo for it to take place, was my interpretation. Mm-hmm. Obviously, this all sets things into action. And they end up going to Mr. Universe to try to get some answers.
How do you guys feel about the fact that there is a Mr. Universe? Because I thought that was so silly.
That was ridiculous.
I did not like it at all. And I didn't, I mean, I thought David Krumholtz, I mean, I liked him on Numbers. And I think he obviously played the character he was assigned to play. But I was just like, really?
There's a magic Mr. Universe to solve it all.
I can't get over the fact that it was Bernard the Elf sitting in Santa's little workshop in this cloudy little planet.
The character annoyed me a little bit, but I just, the minute he popped up on screen, I was like, David Krumholtz, what are you doing here? Like, I had no idea he was involved in this at all, so it was like a shock to the system.
Well, and the whole Lovebot thing, and I'm like...
Yeah,
that was so creepy.
I was just like, yeah, creepy much, not to mention...
That has been explored better in a Starkid musical, I'm pretty sure.
Oh my god! Like, it's a like Lovebot, and it's like a Jewish Lovebot. Did anybody else catch that he had a yarmulke on and they're smashing glass? And I'm like, let's just offend everybody. You know, I was like, oh my gosh. So, yeah, I mean, I get why they had to have a Mr. Universe kind of figure. I hated the name. And I just felt like I didn't like that characterization. I mean, I did like it that there was a guy monitoring the signals and can't stop the signal. And I mean, I think that's legit because there are people like that that know like everything that goes on in like every corner of the internet. So I feel like, you know, he was like the anonymous, you know, like the hackers. Like that's who he was. But I just
he was the brown coat, you guys.
Yeah, I just despised his characterization. I like the information, but I did not like how they did it there at all.
So I'll be the one person then that actually really liked him. That's okay. That usually happens on podcasts.
Hey, I actually liked him too. So I agree with you.
Oh, okay. All right, cool. Yeah, first of all, David Krumholtz, I love him. I love numbers. So I forgot that he was in the movie and I kind of freaked out when he popped on screen. But I think it is a little bit ridiculous. The name Mr. Universe is kind of silly. But at the same time, like, this movie's pretty intense and there's a lot of dark, scary things happening, especially once we get the Reavers in the picture. And I think that he was there as a sort of comic relief, and yeah. So it didn't really bother me all that much that he was a little over the top and super silly. I thought his character was really funny, and I did really enjoy the whole plot line of him being, you know, you can't stop the signal and he's the one that monitors it.
You
all so
can't stop the motion of the ocean. Oh my god. No one should catch me ever singing a High School Musical.
Or Hairspray.
That was Hairspray,
was it? Okay, well, there you go.
Did anyone else catch a Satellite 5 vibe from this whole Mr. Universe thing, or is that just me?
It does have a little Doctor Who Satellite 5.
I'm catching Doctor Who references from this episode or from this movie, and I don't know why.
It is a similar vibe, definitely. I could see that without question. So why don't we talk about our two missing people a little bit? Because obviously they get a certain set of information off of Mr. Universe, and you know, eventually they're going to start investigating what Miranda is. But before this goes very far, we have two people. We have Book, who's living now off ship, and you have Inara, who's living off ship. I know I personally, and I know Kyle probably doesn't feel like this at all, but I felt cheated on us not getting more of Book. Did you guys feel cheated about, like, okay, happy, Book's here, we're having a barbecue, and then Book's dead, and I'm like, what?
Yeah, I mean, I don't like him. I never liked him in the show. I really did think he was evil, but considering that he was one of the main characters, you know, both him and Inara, but mostly Book, really got shortchanged.
I'm in such denial that when you said main characters, my mind instantly went, really? I don't know why.
Well, but he was, however we feel. We have to admit that.
And I also felt a little cheated, just, like, not like that I was, like, particularly minded, but I was still, like, confused. I was way overly confused than I'd like to have been when it came to why he left, where he is, where he was before he joined Serenity. I'm just like, who are you, you evil man with big hair?
His hair was smaller, though, so...
Oh, yeah, I know. He had cornrows.
The evil was in the hair.
Yeah. I mean, I was cool with the fact that Book, you know, went down fighting and went down with something he believed in, because I feel like that's very true to the character. But I very much minded coming in after the whole place was smoldering and not getting more of a buildup. I mean, I do understand the whole scorched earth policy they were going for and that they were just going to, you know, annihilate anybody they had ever been with. But I was like, I felt like it had less of an emotional impact. I really wanted more to know what Book was doing with his life.
Well, and we
I feel like we're really being really negative about all the stuff that we were like, we would have wanted more. We basically just wanted more, is what we're saying.
Yeah, no, I was a little disappointed that we didn't get like a firm backstory for him because they hinted at it so much in the show. And
yeah,
we got so many little tidbits here and there of what he used to do. And the fact that we didn't get a firm...
He was like a mystery, wasn't he?
Right. And I just kind of wish they would have put a name to whatever it is he was, whether we know what that really is or not. In my head, he kind of did what the operative did. And that kind of moved him into this whole belief system. I think so, too.
That was my thought, that he was evil and stuff, was that he had some kind of ties to the Alliance.
Yeah, like, it made me, just seeing the similarities between him and this operative guy, and him trying to talk to Mal about beliefs and all of that, it just triggered something that it made me think that's what it was. And I really thought we were going to get that admission before he died, and when we didn't, I was just like frustrated.
Yeah, and it is very similar, I have to say. If you read The Shepherd's Tale, you're not that far off. It is very similar to that. Okay, so how about Inara? I mean, he ends up, you know, Inara ends up contacting them, and it's, you know, she's asking them to come by and everything. Did you think that Mal was going to be fooled or not? Like, what did you guys think?
I definitely thought that there was some secret message going on, because I knew, like, I know Inara's character well enough to know that, like, she isn't just going to call him up and invite him to a trap. Like, there's going to be a secret body language thing, some weird setting in the background, like, or some, like, code that they have that she'd be like, it's a trap. Like, I knew it from the very get-go, because we saw the operative approach Inara, because Inara thought he was a client, I guess, and the look on her face was like, oh, well, crap. And so I knew there's got to be a code, like, instantly.
Yeah.
There's just something about the way she was talking to Mal from the get-go and that thing. You just know something's not right. And, she's giving Mal a hint with the way she's talking, like, yeah, guess what? Things aren't as cool here as they seem.
Yeah, because she is definitely a little stiff, and she's like, oh, yes, well, you know, I mean, it's just so Inara without fire as she's talking. So, okay, cool. So you guys didn't
And that
get
was, by the way,
it.
My absolutely favorite blooper of all time, when he's there, they're in the thing, and he's like, did you guys know it was a trap? This makes me laugh.
I also loved the line in there. I don't think it's anybody's quote for the episode, where they're all just kind of sitting around listening to the phone call, and he says, Kaylee really misses you, and they all go, oh! I was like, it's so like family, like everybody's listening at the door. Like, it's so great.
Mm-hmm. It is cool. So we end up from that, and then Mal reunites with Inara. I mean, we didn't get a book reunion, not real. I mean, it was, you know, blink and you miss it. Versus Mal reunites with Inara and the operatives there, and we get this really kick-ass action scene. So what did you guys think about the reunion with Inara?
His outfit, when he comes in with the beading and the... Oh, it's so funny.
Yeah.
And I want a pony. I love that whole bit.
I love Inara's, like, just sly badassery. Like, just, like, lighting that flash bomb was perfect. Like, as soon as she was like, I'm praying for you, I'm like, oh, no, you're not. You were totally doing something sneaky.
I love and that she saved him, yeah.
I know. Cool. It was great. I was like, that's the thing. I was watching that whole scene, and I was waiting for her to just, like, come up and, like, help him out. And, like, every single time she got thrown to the wall, I was like, well, what the heck? Come on. Like, Inara's not this, like, lenient to just get kicked to the curb, you know? I was just, like, waiting for it. And then at the end, I was just like, okay, there we go.
So here's a question, because obviously Mal and Inara have these unrequited feelings for each other. And we do finally get a payoff of Simon and Kaylee after this, like, near death, you know, experience, you know, when all the stakes are there, and, you know, obviously Zoe has lost the love of her life, and they're finally like, screw it. They finally admit their feelings to each other, and then you get to see them together, finally. Did anybody want, like, more from Mal and Inara? Did anybody want, like, that kind of payoff, or are you happy that they still are not together? Because I know, see, I used to be a huge Simon Kaley shipper, so I was like, yay, Simon Kaley. And I didn't think about Mal and Ara so much, but now I'm so much more Mal and Ara that I'm like, I just wanted a really great kiss. That's all I wanted.
That's the bane of a shipper's existence, though, isn't it? We're forever just waiting for that, and sometimes it doesn't come, and we're like, no, forever that door will not be closed. But I think, like, for me, again, because I'm not really that into Simon Kaley, that was always my ship, like Mal and Ara, and I think that's probably one of the most disappointing things about Firefly overall. Not that shipping necessarily is very important in Firefly, but it's just one of those, it's kind of like the Shepherd book. They were leading up to they were building to a reveal that never came. This is one of those things. They were building to a culmination of, you know, feelings, if you will, that which never came. But I mean, I don't know if you know this, Laura, or anyone else who's like read a bunch of extra material, but was this one of those things that they chose to save in case they came back for a sequel?
I believe that is exactly what they chose. And there's something else when we get down to the fun facts. There's another fun, or perhaps not so fun, fact about Inara's backstory that I think that's exactly what was going on, is they were saving it. Hopefully there would be another movie. Yeah.
Because they couldn't resolve all of the relationship stuff in the first one. Like, you know, unless they like gave Zoe a new love interest or something like that. But like they had to say, if they thought there's probably going to be a sequel to this, then they would, if they closed all of the character links in the first movie.
Right.
I could see why they wouldn't. Yeah, I could see why they would choose not to do that. But leaving it like that, I do feel, and I feel like in a way, like that relationship was even more important than Simon Kaley, not just because of how I think about it, but because Mal is the main character and because Simon and Kaley were kind of canon in the show. I mean, they never acted on it, but they were sort of very strongly leading to that, whereas Mal and Inara was always just sort of on the, it was something that was, there were clues to it, but it was never made explicit, not even in dialogue. So I feel like that's the kind of thing, and bringing her back and having that big reunion in the movie, I mean, they led up to it in the movie itself, you know?
Right, right. I mean, I think you had with Mal and Inara, you had them having a series of conversations that was all but saying it, and then they'd change tactics. Like somebody would come in and interrupt them, or like it was never them stopping the conversation. It was always facts in their way. Or you had moments of like when
and they almost kissed at one point.
Well, or the closest you have is Inara revealing her feelings when Mal is unconscious and she thinks he's dead, and kissing her, and then getting knocked out from Saffron's like poison lipstick. But you know, so there are definitely points where you see it, or Inara crying her eyes out when she realized that Mal has slept with her best friend. Right. You know, so there's definitely like canon hints to it, but it is hard being a Mal and Ara shipper. You just want to go, just kiss,
just
please.
that gift, that perfect gift that you need for that.
Yeah, really, really, absolutely.
It would have been really way too neat to tie all of that up at the very end, though. And Simon and Kaley were very much the young love, and Mal and Inara were much more of the slow burn. So it would have been way too neat, I think, to bring them all together.
What is it with Nathan Fillion and slow burns on TV? Castle and this, Jesus.
Let's go back a little bit now to our Miranda thing, because all of this ends up leading to them being on Miranda, and we've touched on it before. So they get to Miranda, and we find out exactly what has gone on, and then the resolution, which this is scary, is okay, I'm going to bring all the Reavers to you. Did anybody else go like, what? Like, this could go badly. Like, at what point did you realize that was the complete plan? That it was, we are bringing the Reavers to the Alliance fleet so that you're so busy you can't even bother to, you know, attack us, and we can get right into Mr. Universe's control tower and then just spread the truth to everybody. How were you about the grand plan of what was going down?
You know, I actually saw this coming as soon as they're like, oh, he won't see this coming. I'm like, okay, so basically he's going to do the same exact thing that I saw in this other movie, I can't remember right now, but like in this one movie in space, a ship flies through like a whole bunch of like magnetic mines or something and pulls them along behind the ship, directly towards their enemy. And so they basically did the same thing as that movie. And it was just like, okay, I can see that working. I can, as long as like the Firefly is fast enough, so I don't see any reason it wouldn't work. What caught me off guard was the fact that the ship was basically ultimately destroyed. That was crazy. But I totally saw that plan coming from a mile away. Like, was I the only one?
I definitely did not see it coming until I think it was Mal yelled at Wash to like hit the burners, like, let's go, like now. And the minute he did that, I was like, oh my god, he's gonna use them as his own bodyguards and like just go rushing in head first and, you know, see what happens.
I didn't
see
that coming either at all. Like, I feel like, I don't know, like all my years of TV and film watching just left me completely unprepared for the twist in this film.
Yeah. I mean, I did get it was like now, as in now escape. I didn't right away flash that that meant now we're escaping and, oh, by the way, we're bringing them with us. I was like, oh my god, like that. I definitely was not prepared for that.
Yeah.
So it basically leads to this, I mean, amazing, amazing sequence. I mean, this battle scene, and you get to see, I mean, we've always seen Wash's skills as a pilot. And he does this amazing sequence with the whole, I'm a leaf on the wind, I'm a leaf on the wind. And they land, and it's like, oh my god, they made it. And then Wash is dead.
No, I don't want to talk about it.
I mean, what did you guys think about, like, how effective was that, the way that they killed Wash? And then after it happened, were you like, oh my god, are they all going to die? So
yes.
What was your what was your reaction to that whole thing?
I
got freaking spiked. It was ridiculous. It was terrible.
It was the most like random thing to ever, like, I was just like, I was like, oh yay. I was like so proud of him too, like with his leaf on the wind thing, and like he was saying it just as he died. I was like really proud of him. He was saying it, and then I was like, oh, you did not just kill him in the middle of his like proud little moment. Like,
I was so mad at how sudden it happened. I was like, what? Like, he, like, it comes through the windshield and then poof, he's dead and they're gone. And I'm like, no, no, we have to go back. Like, we have to have a moment for poor Wash and Zoe and, like, give them a chance to kind of, like, say goodbye or something.
I
was just, I was so mad. I just started getting, like, in my head, I'm just like, no, there's no way. Something happened. No.
I think it's also the first time we see Zoe not focused, because usually, like, whatever happens, Zoe has been the one who is, like, can just separate it in her brain, you know, because she's a soldier. And this is the first time that Mal's like, Zoe, we gotta go. Zoe, we gotta go. That for me was really, like, I was like, wow, you know, and the fact that, you know, Kaylee then later is like, well, where's Wash? And she's like, he's not coming. And it's like, oh my god. And Zoe's now like back in soldier mode, and you're like, oh my god, that was amazing. I also liked it too, because war is random, and mm-hmm. and you know, not everybody gets to do the big glorious battle and then die. I thought what Wash did, and like that was his curtain call to me, like flying the way that he did and then getting killed, it's just not what we're used to expecting. So that's my
I have a total rant about this. Okay. You're right, uh-oh, Laura, that war is random. Storytelling, though, should not be random.
Have you ever read George R. R. Martin?
Yeah, hello. However, my thing with this is that Wash's death forever feels pointless to me, storytelling-wise, because Shepherd Book's death, well, I don't like it, but I get what it's doing for the story. That's where Mal kind of makes his decision to really that they're going to get the truth out and they're going to, you know, figure out what's going on and make sure everyone knows. So there is a narrative point that Shepherd Book's death fulfills. Wash's death doesn't, to me, fulfill any kind of narrative point. It pisses Zoe off, but she was already going to be in the middle of a fight anyway. She didn't really need that. And all it did was just kill someone off that was completely random. It was just complete shock value, and it was a complete waste to me.
Well, I mean, that's definitely a good point. And maybe, again, you know, reading Game of Thrones really has, like, sort of, you know, because I was just bringing that up because George R. R. Martin makes such a point to kill off, you know, send people off on these epic adventures and then cut them down just before they reach whatever they're reaching, just to show that, yeah, sometimes people just die. But, I mean, weren't you saying that you thought that Mal and Inara, if they had gotten together, that would have been too neat. I think this is the same thing. Like, leaving open ends, sometimes killing off people for no, even if there's no purpose. If there had been some big revelation from Wash's death, or if everyone had made, you know what I mean? Like, that might also have been too neat. So I feel like this is kind of the same as not having Mel and Nara have their big, like, swelling music, sort of running towards each other, having that epic kiss. Like, you can make the same point about both.
But they've already killed someone on the crew, that so that they're already proved that not everyone was safe because Book was dead. So that just, it felt like overkill.
But that was Shepherd Book. Like,
who some of us actually like.
But the thing is that Noah and the crew, he wasn't instrumental to anyone's life. Like, Wash was so instrumental. He was their pilot. Everybody loved Wash. He was Zoe's husband. Like, that death, like, an emotional, you know, in terms of that, I think it had, like, tremendous value.
And I feel like it was just the stark realities of war, whereas, like, Shepherd Book's death was more of a calculated move on the enemy's part. It wasn't a casualty. And with war and with all these battles and all these ships flying out of the air and all these Reavers hitting all these other ships, there was just like the realistic possibilities of no one dying from that was very slim. And so I like the fact that I don't like the fact that Wash died, but I do like the fact that Wash died because I'm crazy. Because it just shows that's the point in the movie. That is the exact point that you go, well, crap.
Anyone could die.
Anyone can die. It's like that was the point of the thing, was just to show that this is war. This is a battle. No one is safe. Like, yeah, they all landed and they all did everything. But right at the very end, and it kind of like a realistic thing. It's like in real battles, people think they're safe and they fight their battle and they go, whew, that was close. And then it wasn't close. It was the end.
After he died, I thought everyone, I thought Simon was going to die. I thought everyone was going to die. I thought everybody was so dying.
Yeah. I know I got really worried for everybody else the minute he died, for sure.
But I think in terms of, like, say that it had been Jane who died instead, like, I would have thought that was a bit overkill, like, pointless. Because, again, he was a character we cared about, but he was kind of he was disposable. You know what I mean? Like, it just felt like Wash was so integral. Like, you never thought he was going to die. So the fact that they killed him was so much more shocking.
For me, I think it would have been way too easy if the entire original crew makes it through this battle without a casualty. Mm-hmm. When we first met Serenity, Book and Simon and River were not a part of the crew. And so there's no way that you can end this series, possibly, or, you know, give us our last look at it, and this crew is just one big happy family still. And yes, they lost Shepherd Book, but he was not, you know, an original member of the crew. So I assumed that at some point we were going to lose one of them. Personally, I thought and hoped that it would be Jane, just because I thought that if he was the one that goes, it would have an impact, and they would all be shocked at the impact it had, because not all of them love Jane, but they do love Jane at the same time. So that was my, like, hope, was that that would be what happened.
Yeah,
so
I hoped he was going to get taken off by the Reavers. So, like,
sacrifice himself or something.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, but, you know, and I understand the Wash thing, and you cannot, if you take out a character as wholesome and amazing as Wash, it does broadcast in a second just how fragile everyone is in this crew and how no one is safe. And I think that's more or less what he was trying to get at.
And he didn't even get, like, a big sacrifice. You know, that's the thing that was so horrible and brilliant about it. Like, it really was a Game of Thrones style death. You know, he didn't get that big sort of epic, I'm gonna go out with a bang, you know, kind of thing. Like, but then I hated it at the same time because it was so sad. But I have to admit that that's kind of, you know, it's like like in Lost sometimes, not going to spoil anything, but you had some of those same things, and every once in a while you'd be left going, like, why did that have to happen, you know?
Right.
Why would you do this to me? Anyway, I'm sorry.
I see what you guys are saying. I just don't agree.
Yeah. I hear you.
I'm sure lots of people don't agree.
Yeah. No, and I think we've all been there with some story where one of our very favorite characters has died with just such an utter randomness, or not knowing, not that I'm bitter about Remus Lupin or anything, 5 years after the book came out.
That was uncalled for J.K. You know, Rolling.
I mean, just both parents, I mean, really, J.K.?
Talk about pointless death.
Not that I'm bitter.
Or not to mention Hedwig.
Yeah. The bird could buy it. I was fine with the bird buying it, but yeah.
Still makes me mad.
Yeah.
Oh, so
yeah.
Mad.
Just saying. Anyway. Anyway, we go from that into this last stand. I mean, oh my gosh. I mean, total last stand, you know, and there's so many different parts to it. And it's Mal is like, you got to hold him here. You got to defend this position. And he's going to go, you know, send the signal out. And of course, you know, the doors aren't going to close the right way. So this is going to, you know, this is not going to go as smoothly as we all thought. And you end up with so many people. Like, you know, Zoe goes down, Simon goes down, you know, just everybody's wounded. Although I did, one of my favorite moments is Kaylee going, I want to live. You know?
Ah, so cool. I love that.
You know, it's one of my favorite points. But when River goes for Simon's bag, I know my heart just broke because I remember thinking, yeah. It doesn't matter how good she is. She's never, especially as you see her being grabbed by them. Mm-hmm. Like, I know for me, I when I watched it the first time, I thought it's just too many. And too many who are unhesitant and too vicious. And she's never going to be able to fight this off. Did you guys think that River was dead at that point?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I was like bawling. I was like, no, yeah. No. And like, because I was already crying when Simon got shot, and then I was like, I'm like, no, not River too, not both the Tam twins, come on.
I didn't, actually, because they had already made a point of showing how much of a badass and that she is, like, what's the point of showing how capable she is if you're just going to kill her off later?
Yeah, maybe I've seen one too many movies, but I just assumed she's going to make it. She's going to make it. Like, there's no way she could die. She's going to make it. Maybe I was in denial, but I
kept waiting for her to wear that clothes she wore in the poster.
Oh, yeah. That's a good point. That's a good point. I didn't even think about that. I know for me, one of the parts that I really loved there is that it was such a moment of clarity for River. I mean, she does have these moments of clarity, but it's like kooky clarity. But it was a real total clarity moment for her where she said, you did everything for me. Now it's my time to help you. And I think I felt like she was of complete sound mind and she took the actions she took, not really knowing if she was going to live or die there. What did you guys think about that?
Yeah, I love that. I think there was a point where she was on Miranda. I think it was when she was on Miranda and like she was seeing all these things happening and all these like bodies and corpses and stuff. And like she gets sick and then I don't know if this was on Miranda or if this is at a later point in the show, but she gets sick and Simon's like, are you okay? And she goes, I'm okay. And then she has this second realization. She's like, wait, like I'm actually okay. And I feel like that was the moment of realization where mentally speaking, she has recuperated somehow, and it's like this huge thing has been lifted off her shoulders, and she's not as imbalanced as she once was. And I feel like when she went out to save him, that's the culmination of those moments before that, going to this, she's lucid, she knows everything, she understands everything, she's not this crazy little scared girl anymore. And I feel like that was perfect.
Yeah, it's such a moment of, like, the truth shall set you free. I mean, literally, that's absolutely what happens there, and it does.
My favorite thing in this series is, including the movie, is when Simon and River go to the ends of the earth to protect each other, and that was just another moment of, we're going to protect each other. It's the Tam sibling relationship that I love so much.
Yeah, yeah, it is. It's epic. It's totally epic. So while that's going on, Mal is, you know, trying to, you know, figure out how he's going to get all this information out. And, you know, here's the love bot who's telling Mal what went on, which I was like, oh, my God, the love bot's talking. but, you know, it ends up with this showdown with the operative. Did you guys think that Mal was going to win or lose that battle? And how did you like sort of the ha 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 end of how he, you know, gets out of the situation with, like,
I was waiting for some Mal trickery this entire fight. I'm like, they're pretty evenly matched when it comes to the physicality. Like, they seem to kind of be trading blows. And I was like, come on, Mal, you've got to do something sneaky in order to get out of this. Like, come on. Like, and so when we got the nerve movement thing, like him talking, oh, I had that nerve moved years ago, I was like, yes, like, it had to be something a little bit underhanded, a little bit, you know, crazy to kind of get him out of the situation. So I was happy with the whole fight sequence thing. But yeah, I was waiting for it.
Like, so eventually Mal gets the message out. Like, how did you feel about, like, the understanding that kind of comes between Mal and the operative? Like, the operative finally, you know, he backs down, realizing that, you know, the cause he was for was maybe not so righteous after all. What did you guys think about that?
I feel like I got some of River's, like, telepathic abilities somehow through this movie, because because, like, I saw also that coming as soon as, like, we started realizing that the operative is, like, this moral guy who thinks he's doing things on the greater good, and he's, like, a monster, but he knows he's a monster, but he's doing it because he thinks it's right and he thinks it's what needs to be done. And as soon as they found out this information that they want to let the world know, I was like, okay, so they're going to let this out and he's going to find out and he's going to, like, let them go, or he's going to change his heart. And so, I don't know, like, I feel like I'm the only one who just keeps seeing things coming during this movie, and it makes me sad because I wish it was a surprise. But, like, because of his character, I totally saw it coming.
I know a lot of people think the turnaround with the villain was really convenient, but I really like when the villains turn good. And I mean, not that the operative was really all that great in the end, but I really liked how he actually sat down and thought for himself for a moment. I mean, Mal kind of forced him to do that, and he realized that what was going on and what Mal was trying to do needed to be done. And so I was glad that instead of just killing the bad guy off, it was sort of a twist that he kind of turned around and he stopped his soldiers from killing River and all of that. So I really enjoyed that ending part there.
It ends up wrapping up with basically they're now repairing their ship that is a mess, having, like, crash landed. And they're kind of slowly planning their futures, and it's kind of something as a curtain call in a sense, where you get to see each character doing something they're good at to help put Serenity back together again. And then it ends between a really great conversation. Well, there's two things that go on. I mean, that we have Wash's funeral, and then we end up with the conversation between Mal and River in the cockpit. So we have a lot all going on there. So how did you guys feel about, you know, sort of the moments of the end? Because we really have three moments. We have the funeral, we have the repairing of Serenity, and then we have the cockpit scene where we kind of get a glimpse into the future. Which one of those three sort of ending-ish wrap-ups things did you guys, like, enjoy the most? What was the most meaningful to you?
I think for me, it was between Mal and River, because I feel like this is the first time that Mal really sees the good side of River. I mean, he's protected her before, and he's wanted to keep her on the ship in the past during the show, but this is sort of the first time I think that he trusts her enough. I mean, she's flying the ship, you know? So I think he sees that when she does have those clear moments, that she really is this great person, this very intelligent person that can fly the ship and be a part of the crew and actually help them out. And so just to have Mal accept her like that, I think was really rewarding.
Yeah, it's one of those relationships that doesn't really have a lot of time to develop, you know, over the course of the show. Like, those, the constellation of those two characters. And that's one of the reasons I would have really liked a second film, just to see how the two of them would interact. Because it kind of feels like, I mean, Mal is taking on all these girls kind of thing. You know, he's got Kaylee and he's got Zoe and he's got these great platonic relationships. And I think that Mal and River could have been another really, really good one. Plus, you know, they needed a pilot, so.
Yeah.
I know. I was like scared. I thought they were gonna like try to hire some new pilot or something, and I was like, no. But I agree with you guys. I think that scene between Mal and River is the most heartfelt and the most like touching, I think. Just because being able to see River be so lucid and be so normal and like with her abilities still intact and like, I know what you're gonna say, but that doesn't mean I don't wanna hear you say it. Like it's great. I love that. And it really and made me like, eager
it's
to
love.
Exactly.
Like, are you Dumbledore now? Like happening?
I just wanted to see it happen in the second movie. I wanted to see how River acts.
Right.
So bad.
Well, and what I think too is there are a lot of just really, I mean, there's certainly a lot of Joss Whedon humor in this movie, but there are a couple of amazing just Joss Whedon like statements and truths that come out of the mouths of characters. And nobody picked this particular one as their favorite quote, but Mal in the cockpit is talking with River, and I think he just sums up what life on Serenity is and what it's meant to all of them. And he says, love, you can learn all the math in the verse, but you take a boat in the air you don't love and she'll shake you off just as sure as turn of the world. Love keeps her in the air when she ought to fall down, tells you she's hurting before she keens, makes her a home. And it's literal, but it's also without question figurative as to what made that Firefly Serenity vessel their true home, and what kept her in the air wasn't just the love of the mechanics and understanding that vessel, but understanding absolutely everybody aboard that vessel and that they were all there as a team. And I think that's the beauty of that last scene very much.
For me, the one that really sticks with me at the end is the funeral. There's so much said without any words, and I think it's a really beautiful like shot scene. Like, it's just very aesthetically pretty, and oh my god, Gina Torres looked stunning in that dress when she walked up.
Oh my god, yes, like, that
so
dress
thin in this movie though.
Also, mm-hmm. Also, fun fact: why Gina Torres was wearing that dress is that because of the influence of the Chinese, white is traditionally a Chinese funeral color. So that is why she was wearing a white dress. And then the other reason why she was wearing that dress, do you remember the episode where Mal encounters Atherton Wing and Kaylee gets the big poofy dress? And Zoe says, if I'm going to buy me a dress, I'm going to buy me a dress that has some slink to it.
No.
So that's why she's wearing the slinky dress, is because that's that, and Wash is going, Captain, can I buy my woman a slinky dress? So that's why she's wearing the slinky dress. Ugh. And that's why it's white, because
it's so
white,
heartbreaking.
Yeah, because white is the Chinese, like, unlike American society would be black, in Chinese it's white. So that's why she's wearing that.
I really wish you hadn't said that. I'm like, Wash's death all over again.
I just made everyone cry on the podcast. Oh no.
It was great, though.
Yeah.
I just have one question. When the operative talks to Mal, and he leaves Simon and River and everything, and he was like, I told them that you're no threat, but I don't know if they believe me. He was like, does that mean that there's no bounty on them anymore? Does that mean that River and Simon are free to go into Alliance planets?
Correct.
Now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because at this point, there's no secret. I mean, it's all exposed. Now, could they come after them for something else? Could they change their mind? I mean, it absolutely does set up a sequel, but it basically says, for now, we're not coming after you for this, correct?
Yeah, unless they, like, all exploded at the end when the ship started falling apart.
Yeah. Okay, good to know.
But the implication, too, is that how much is in River's brain? Obviously, she knew Miranda. Yeah. What else might she know? So that's sort of, you know, it could be something in the future.
I just want Simon to get a stable job as a doctor.
So he can support you.
There you go.
Oh yeah, exactly.
Talking about New Adventures of Serenity, you know what, I am not up on this as well as I could be. Selena, are you more up on this than I am?
No,
because I've always thought there really wasn't anything in the works. Is anybody else aware
You mean just in terms of that? I mean, the only thing that I had was when I spoke to Alan Tudyk last year. I mean, I saw, you know, it's the question when you speak to Alan Tudyk, like anyone from Firefly, you have to ask. And he said, well, you know, it's one of those things that Joss Whedon and Nathan Fillion and all those people, they still really want to do it. But at this point, it's probably not happening.
Yeah. It's nothing imminent. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, unfortunately, what happened is, and I think there actually is more of a market for a sequel now. What ended up happening is, so there was Firefly, and it had this cult following, and then there was the Serenity movie, and the cult got bigger. But I think what happened is a lot of people got into Firefly and Serenity after the movie. So they didn't fuel the movie when it was in the box office. The right. movie is not what you would have called a box office success, unfortunately. So Hollywood lives and dies by the mighty buck. And I think now there would be a much bigger audience for a Serenity Firefly movie. But based on past history, it's harder to get that kind of thing financed.
Right. And honestly, I mean, I think at this point, the actors have aged a lot, you know, things like that. I think that it would almost have to be some kind of like Star Wars like prequel or the next generation or something like that, and it just wouldn't be the same.
Yeah, I mean, we are talking 10 years out, and they still look really good, I would say. Yeah. But there's definite differences of, you know, I mean, these were people who were in largely, not everybody, were largely in their 20s and 30s when this was shot, and they're now in their 30s and 40s. Obviously, like, Book is the exception to that. But there's obviously, like,
he's dead anyway.
Yeah, and he's dead anyway, so does that matter? That's true. But there's obviously definite physical differences between then and now. Some people look remarkably the same. Like, I would say Jewel Sate, who plays Kaylee, looks very much the same. Like creepily so. Summer Glau too. I mean, I think there's probably less of a visual change when you go early 20s to early 30s than when you go early 30s to early 40s, because I think everybody else, there is a clear and definite visual change in what they look like. So
yeah,
we definitely had some favorite lines and favorite scenes this time out. So why don't we start off with our favorite lines and why do we love them? Kristen, why don't we start with you? What's your favorite line?
So many throughout this entire movie. I just was taking notes and I would quote people as they're saying it, like, oh my god, I love that. And I had a bunch, but the one that sticks with me is Kaylee saying, "The hell with this, I'm gonna live." It's just the perfect Kaylee moment in the midst of all this crazy, and everyone is like getting shot and dying and whatnot. And the sheer mention that Simon regrets not like sleeping with her and being with her is enough for her to say, like, no, we're going to turn this around. I'm going to live. Let's do it. And I just, I love it. I love it.
It's a great moment. It really is. I love the batteries too, but that's a better moment.
I know. Yeah. That one was perfect.
Kyle, how about you?
Okay. So so many, as Kristen said, I was like writing them down. It's so hard to pick, but I had to go with this one just because of my heart for Wash.
Aww.
Is, "I'm a leaf on the wind. Watch how I soar." And I love that because I wrote it down when he first said it. Cause I was just like, oh, I love that. Like, you go, Wash. And then like he was struggling a little bit, and then he said it out loud. He said, "It's okay, I'm a leaf on the wind." And Mal was like, "What does that mean?" And it was like, it was perfect. And I hate them for killing him off right after he said it, right when he was happy.
No, like, he was a leaf on the wind, you guys.
Yeah. Oh. Karen, how about you?
My favorite line is from Mal when he says, "Zoe, ship is yours. Remember, if anything happens to me, if you don't hear from me within the hour, you take the ship and you come and rescue me." And I just, it's so Mal.
I like her response, too.
he's not the hero, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, he is the hero, but he's not trying to be the hero where he's going to go off and sacrifice himself. Like, he still very much wants to live. And I think it's a cool twist on the idea of a hero. And it's just, you know, typical male humor. And I love it. And yeah, I think Zoe was like, "My ship?" Like, she didn't want
anything. "Why would I risk my ship?"
Yeah.
That was almost my favorite line. That was brilliant, too.
Caitlin, how about you?
Since Kristen took mine, the one that really stuck with me was at the very beginning of the movie during the bank heist. Zoe says to this guy who's trying to pull a gun out to, you know, turn the tides or something. She goes, "You know what the definition of a hero is? Someone who gets other people killed." And I was like, chills.
true. Mm-hmm. Selena, how about you?
Yeah, I was so torn. Again, so many lines. And I think no one brought up "Let's be bad guys," but that was, again, one that I almost picked. I have one, and then I have another one that I have to say too, which is the first one was just the most brilliant exchange. This is like a Whedonism just summed up right here. It was when they were fighting in the cockpit, and Mal goes to Jane, "You want to run this ship?" And Jane goes, "Yeah." And Mal goes, "Well, you can't." I was laughing like out loud. It was brilliant. And then I just had one from actually the DVD extras, which is Joss Whedon, which just like almost had me tearing up. I was watching that when he goes, "Remember, they tried to kill us." Speaking about Fox, they did kill us, and here we are. And I was like, fist bump, we're here. Aw.
Yeah, awesome. So awesome. For me, yeah, there's a lot that I'm torn on. But the one that I really love, and this is so weird because we all know that Jane is not my favorite character. And I have a Jane quote, and it takes place right after Mal explains to them on Miranda why they have to go back, and he's not going to make anybody do anything with him, but he wants their support, and why they have to go back, because they're going to do it again if they don't go back. And Jane says, "Shepherd Book used to tell me, if you can't do something smart, do something right."
Yeah.
And I loved that it was Book coming back. I loved that it infiltrated into Jane's brain of all people. So, and it's just such a great quote. So that was mine.
That was great.
Yeah. So favorite scenes. There are just so many here. Kristen, why don't we start off with you? What was your favorite scene?
Okay. Yeah. Again, so many, because there's so many really great moments, but I chose basically anything that had the Kaylee Simon interactions. I loved like her goodbye to him and River when they're supposedly leaving the ship. Like, she's just standing there like almost tearing up, just telling them all of these things she can think of, like, you know, don't get on anybody's ship that you can't, you know, talk to the captain, don't take anybody's word for anything, don't pay for anything before before delivery. Like, I just love the whole build up for them throughout the movie. And then you get, you know, her the little declaration scene for them where they confess to each other, and then the final little glimpse at them and their happy ending. Like, I just love it.
Giggity.
Cool. Oh gosh. Kyle, how about you? Favorite scene?
My favorite scene, as you may or may not have predicted, was the discovery of Miranda and all the Reavers and all the dead people in town, and like the corpses, and like how like everyone was just dead. And they're like, I don't know how they die. Like, it wasn't gas. It wasn't anything. And like,
wait. You can't pick that whole thing.
What?
Oh, cause.
What?
You have to choose so much either when they find out about the Reavers or when they go to the planet. Because I want the other one.
Dang it. Okay. I so much death. I'm going to pick Shepherd Book's death. That was my favorite. It was like,
it's a completely different part of the movie.
Oh my god.
You just picked the whole movie.
Okay. Here's this. If there's death, it's my favorite.
Okay.
Well, okay then.
Bring on that testosterone-laden death and destruction, why don't we? Oh my god. Karen, how about you?
My favorite part, hands down, was the ending where River kicks everybody's ass, all the Reavers, because it was amazing. And like we were talking about before, it just looks like a dance, and it's so smooth and it's so beautiful. And she just kills everybody. And she's so scary when she's standing there with the two like swords or whatever she has, and they're dripping blood. But I love seeing, you know, a woman kicking everybody's butts, because usually it's the guy that, you know, goes out and is the hero. And River saved them all, and it was wonderful. And it was a redemption for her character after, you know, all the craziness that she's had to endure.
Yeah, great scene. Great scene. Caitlin, how about you?
I'm going to echo Kristen again. It's my favorite was the confession scene when Simon says that he regrets not being with Kaylee. And she's like, "You mean as in sex?" And he's like, "I mean as in," she's like, "Oh, I'm going to live." Like, the way she cocks the gun, like, that does it for me. But then also when they finally do get together at the very end, when River's head is peering in,
that,
and she's creeping
so
in on them.
I
was like, "You're being creepy, but it's really funny at the same time."
It was adorable and creepy at the same time. Yeah, it was so good.
Yeah, totally, totally. Selena, how about you?
Right, well, I really wanted Kyle to define his scene because it was pretty much the same one that I wanted to choose. Not Shepherd Book's death, but the part where they get to the down to the Reaver planet and they find, because that was so creepy with all the skeletons, and you know that a huge reveal is imminent, and those are always my favorite parts of stuff. It's when the pieces begin to click into place and you know that you're going to find out what happened here, and you know that it's going to be something really significant. And at this point, I still didn't know what it was going to be. I didn't know we were going to get the reveal of the Reavers, that they came from this planet. And oh, that anticipation just made that scene for me. So
did
that
I make that
to
my favorite scene too?
No. It's fine.
Can't have it.
No, it's fine. But it was that sort of build up to the big reveal and everything about it just gave me chills, and I loved it.
Cool. Mine, I'm really torn between two. The first one that I love is Mal on Miranda explaining why they have to go back, and it's because the Alliance will do it again. If they don't bring this information back and risk everything, the Alliance will do it again, and they have to stop it, and he doesn't want to ask anybody to risk their lives, but he would be honored if they were with him. And I just, that's such a powerful moment for me. And then the other one is Mal in the cockpit with River talking about, I mean, just summarizing the whole experience of everything that Firefly was about. And it's like everybody gets teary at different moments. I get teary at that moment, you know, where he's just talking about what it means. And then River flies the ship amazingly well. And she's such an intuitive to it. So those are my two favorites. So yay. Okay. So some fun facts. If you guys remember the Out of Gas episode where there was the big red button and Wash is like, Mal, if you hit this button, you know, we'll come back to the ship and everything like that. Well, Alan Tudyk stole the red button from the set when they left. And when they found out they were going to remake, you know, have a movie, he sent the red button to Joss Whedon going, it's time to recall everybody. So I just thought that was just a really awesome thing that Alan Tudyk went out and did that. And the red button, yay. It's like it's like a really cool story. The other thing that's interesting, so do you guys remember in the very first episode when the Reaver attack is like imminent and everybody's sort of hunkered down in their cells, Inara is sitting there with this really big glass vial in her lap? You guys remember this sort of?
Who wrote Inara's vial in the doc?
That's me.
that's wrong.
Yeah. Well, it's not vial isn't evil, but it's like this glass, this kind of elaborative glass vial with this liquidy substance in it. Do you guys remember that sort of? Maybe, maybe not. But she's sitting there in that first episode with it. So everybody for years and years and years asked Joss Whedon, so what is it? What is, and he said it has to do with Inara's secret. And they're like, well, what is Inara's secret? And for years and years and years, he wouldn't say. It gets better. So back in 2009 is the writer's strike. I'm pretty sure it's 2009. I'm close.
Maybe
2008. Thank you. 2008 is the writer's strike. And Joss Whedon, as a writer, was out there supporting all of his fellow union members. So like fans would like go up and interview these people as they were on picket lines. And one fan went up to Joss Whedon saying, hey, Joss, can you tell us what was in Inara's vial? Never thinking Joss Whedon would answer the question. And he did. And
Oh my God.
It was a drug to keep Inara alive. Inara is dying with incurable disease.
No!
That's why Inara left the House of the Companions so she could see the world before she died.
No, that's stupid. I don't want to know this. Take it back. Undo it. Stupid.
So, and well, what's really cool, and there is a video of this, I will track it down, at Dragon Con that happened not too much after this conversation with Joss Whedon took place. Because, I mean, it's not like this dude recorded it. He never thought Joss Whedon was going to say anything. He just reported it on like a Firefly forum, and people are like, yeah, right, tell me another story. So at Dragon Con, there's this Firefly panel, and pretty much almost all of the main cast is there. And Morena Baccarin, who plays Inara, you know, the guy's online, he's like, I want to ask a question of Morena. And he basically says, look, my cousin met Joss Whedon, who was out in the picket line, and he said to him that Inara's secret was that she was dying. Can you confirm this piece of information? And what you see on the video is Morena sort of lose her poker face for a second, lean over to Jules Sate, and they whisper back and forth for a little bit, and then they whisper again, and she comes back and she says, well, since your source is Joss and you got it from Joss, I will confirm it is true.
No!
So, go back and rewatch Inara moments, and it is so brilliant.
You know what? Moment- In the movie, I thought she looked a little bit like... I just thought it was me. Like, I wasn't going to say anything because I didn't want to offend the actress, but... Oh my god!
No, the, well, there is definitely a moment in the like on
yeah,
the last
yeah,
scene
she
where
doesn't
she
doesn't look like
yeah,
she doesn't have
she
a
makeup
on makeup and,
or
yeah.
anything.
Yeah, uh-huh. and here's other moments like in Out of Gas when Inara says to Mal, "Come with us. Nobody has to die alone."
Oh
Think about like what that moment means, or the moment where she's crying her eyes out because Nandi's sleeping with Mal. It's Mandy sleeping with Nal, but it's also the girl having a baby, and she's constantly having a problem with the girl and the baby because it's something she'll never ever have.
You just blew
my
mind.
God.
So go back.
You just depress us the hell out of us.
So
Selena and I are basically on the same level. We're just like, and like everyone else on this podcast is like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah, and it's so brilliant because if you...
I'm just in shock over here.
Yeah.
Like,
so
what,
if you
putting it all together.
Yeah, so if you go back and rewatch now the next time, so you're going to rewatch
that's
here.
So funny. Like, I really, really thought that something was up with her in the movie. Like, I've, you know?
Yep, and you can see Morena Baccarin playing that context in a bunch of different scenes where death and dying and life and things come up. Like, just look at her reaction and realize where her motivation is coming from, and you're like, you are brilliant. You are so brilliant.
Oh,
so
geez. There's one specific line, too. I think it was in Out of Gas again, where I think Simon or somebody said, like, I don't want to die from freezing to death or whatever. And she says, I don't want to die at all. Yep. And I knew this before before we did the rewatch, and hearing that line, I was like, oh, man. Yep. That's there you go.
See, now they should have kissed in the movie.
Yeah, I mean,
which like I said, for those of us who are Mal and Inara shippers, to know that piece of information, it's like, oh my god, yeah. So, Joss, please just write something else and put them together. So, yeah. So before
we do like a web series, since they're so hot.
Oh my god, that'd be awesome. Yeah. So before we wrap this up, does anybody have anything else they want to add?
Well, no, because now we're all like sad and depressed. Okay.
We're all thinking back to every Inara scene we've ever seen.
I know, like, right?
Oh, now we should do another rewatch.
Right. Well, to end this on a happy note, what I would say is that the wonderful thing is that all of these actors who were such a part of Firefly are still so active in the industry in, you know, items of their own. But also, every time Joss Whedon writes something, he brings back actors who he's worked with before. The other thing, too, Nathan Fillion has continuously put little Firefly references on his current show, which is Castle. And he's also had cast members come back for that. So the really good thing is that these actors are forever in the heart of Joss Whedon. And he is constantly looking for ways that he can use them on
like Much Ado About Nothing.
Right, in his new projects. So I think that's the best part in all of this. We're going to start to wrap up here, but we have some really great information coming your way about what is the future of this podcast, and some free swag here, guys. So Kyle, why don't you talk about the swag here?
All right. So Selena shipped me a book that we mentioned earlier on the podcast. It's just like ginormous. Like, I think, is it leather bound? It looks leather bound. It's like
a
leather bound.
I think it's fake leather, but
but it still feels pretty. It's like this gorgeous Firefly encyclopedia that just has everything about the Firefly.
It's the ultimate anniversary book, isn't it?
tenure.
Yeah, I think, yeah, it's amazing. It comes with all the information about all the characters, all the different worlds and the planets and the alliance and everything. And so she shipped it to me so that it could be easier for us.
I gave it to you in person, you know.
Yeah. Sorry.
Forget about that.
Gave it to me in person.
I was there.
So that we can give it to you guys in the U.S. And so what we're going to do is we're going to do a U.S.-based giveaway. Sorry, international fans. We love you. But we're
yeah, I had to travel all the way to America just to get it to you guys.
I know. Yeah. So look out for a giveaway for this book. It's going to be really awesome. And I'll ship it to you, to the winner soon, hopefully before the end of the week, because we're going to Comic-Con. So I want to ship it before then.
Oh my God. Yeah. And it weighs like a gazillion pounds, just in case you guys are wondering why we can't ship internationally.
Yeah.
It was like half my suitcase out there with that book.
Wow.
Okay, so the details are going to be on hypeable.com on the main page, and is most likely going to be a rafflecopter contest where you enter your information and you tweet about the giveaway and or like us on Facebook and Twitter.
We'll also tweet out details from re_watchable.
Oh yeah,
at on Twitter.
Absolutely. So it'll be loud and proud on Hypeable. So don't worry about it.
Awesome. So, Karen, can you tell us about what's going to be the future of Rewatchable?
Yes, absolutely. We're not going away anytime soon. Our next project is going to be Veronica Mars. We want to watch it ahead of the movie, so we're going to tackle that project next. And all the details aren't exactly pinned down yet, but you guys can expect some of the hosts that did Firefly to be on the next edition of Rewatchable. And we're also going to have some new voices from other podcasts that you might listen to on Hypeable. And we're actually going to have some brand new podcasters that have joined the team recently and haven't been on any other podcasts. So it's going to be pretty exciting.
Awesome. Yay. Can't wait.
Good timing.
Very good. Okay, anybody have anything else to add before we wrap this one up? Okay.
Round codes.
Yay! Okay, folks, thank you so much for rewatching the Firefly series with us. We had a blast. Hopefully you did too. Just to give you a reminder on how you can get in touch with us, you can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com, tweet us at re_watchable, respond to any of our posts here on hypeable.com. And if you really loved us, if you really, really loved us, as I said, please give us a rating over on iTunes so other people know the quality of the podcast. So again, thank you so much for listening. And hopefully you join us again as we rewatch Veronica Mars. I'm Laura.
I'm Selena.
I'm Caitlin.
I'm Karen.
I'm Kristen.
And I am Kyle.
Thanks for listening, guys. Bye.
Bye.
Take my love, take my land.